This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
My mind has been moved toward Jesus this morning, and I thank you, those of you who have shared songs and opening thoughts. Yesterday, I talked about the impact of technology, and just recognize that there's much about the impact of technology I did not talk about. Some of it is actually not fit to talk about. When we think about some of the effects on our culture. Today I want to talk about identifying some of the traps, and so this talk will be more negative, perhaps a little darker side of this subject. But I want to frame it here by recognizing that there are many benefits. We swim in this water of new technology so regularly, and it's sometimes difficult for us to imagine how our lives have changed in good ways, and how the benefits that we enjoy. We can purchase fruits and vegetables year-round, fresh, and enjoy them. We enjoy access to information, just a few taps on the phone or computer or whatever. We can purchase parts for our vehicles online. We can go to YouTube and see how to install them, what's involved. I have done some mechanical repairs. I'm not much of a mechanic, but I have done some that I would not have ventured into if I had not been able to watch a tutorial ahead of it. There's so many benefits. Travel. Many of you came from Meadville this morning, about a 10-mile. 200 years ago, you'd have had trouble doing that, getting here on time, unless you'd have been very energetic. There are advances in medicine, in surgery, endoscopic surgeries, where they make just small incisions, go in. Longer ago, you'd be laid up for days, and today you can go home same day surgeries. These are all benefits. And then connectivity. Those of us who have loved ones who are serving the Lord in other parts of the world, we're able to communicate with them, be in touch with them. I remember talking to a missionary in Romania when our family went there in the year 2000, and he was telling me that he first served, I think it was in Paraguay, it was somewhere in South America. When he was a young man, he had served 2 years there. And he told me that he had had contact with his family only a couple of times during those 2 years. How different things are today. And so we enjoy many benefits. With all new discoveries, however, there are both good and bad possibilities, potentials. Whether we talk about power or communication or information, those technological breakthroughs give us potential for good or evil. And today, I want to explore some of the dangers that are associated with technology, and particularly I'm going to be focusing on electronic gadgetry. And so the first trap that I'd like to think with you about is the trap of gadget lust. We are fascinated with these things. And if you're trying to figure out what all those things are, that's fine, I guess. But we like to explore what smartphones can do, or a smartwatch, or smart anything. I heard recently they're making smart wives now. Imagine that. Or maybe you shouldn't. I haven't heard about smart husbands yet, so I don't know what's with that. But back to electronics. Back in the 90s, there were PDAs, personal digital assistant. And I had married a personal assistant, but this was a personal digital assistant. And they could function as a planner, as a calculator, as a dictionary, and depending what all you put on them and so on, you could do some things. Eventually they came out in color and were able to connect to the internet. And I began wondering, of course there were cell phones then also, and I began wondering, why in the world don't they combine these things? I mean, you have to have several gadgets to be able to do all the stuff that you're supposed to do. And sure enough, smartphone came along. I don't know why they didn't ask me earlier, but they put these things all together into one device, and now PDAs are a relic, a thing of the past. Maybe, I don't know if you folks even knew that they existed, but anyway, they did at one time. Once electronic devices began to be manufactured and improved, so many gadgets have been invented. And so we have phones, watches, calculators, tablets, and then you've got those specialty electronic items that have to do with fitness, or some specifically for music or for photography, for monitoring your blood pressure, children's toys, musical instruments, listening devices. We've got wires coming out of our ears, or going into them, I guess it would be the... Well, now they're wireless, I guess, right? So. But these devices, all sorts of devices. I used to travel a good bit, and I remember the first time I was in an airport, I saw this man, actually heard him, walking down the hallway, and there was nobody around, and he was talking and laughing, and my first thought was, this guy nuts? Or should I answer him? and it dawned on me then that he must be carrying on a conversation by phone. So I watched him. I tried not to stare, but and he went by, and sure enough, sticking out of his ear was this black thing, and he had some kind of connectivity there that he was able to do this wireless thing. We see these gadgets, or we observe them being used, and we want them. We like to be up to date. We like the convenience, sometimes the prestige of having these things. I know one minister who said that their church doesn't allow smartphones, and he does a lot of travel, so once in a while he's tempted when he's traveling to pull out his flip phone and open it up and run his finger up and down just to see what it feels like to see others doing this. These gadgets come in all sizes, all shapes. We wear them, we carry them in our pockets, we attach them to the dashboards of our vehicles, we place them on our workspace, we fidget with them, we hang them on our ears, we talk to them, we listen to them, we watch them, we play with them, we poke their buttons and screens, we take them with us to bed, we instruct them to monitor our activities, whether we're asleep or awake, gadgets. One of the odd things I've found with these gadgets is that they're fascinating for a very short time. You have them and you are constantly thinking about them and so on, and then they lose their thrill, and then you realize you could have gotten a better one, or it's time for an upgrade. And that turnover can be maddening. It was not long into my computer experience until I realized these things don't last very long until they're outdated. And that turnover. I remember getting a new phone a number of years ago from a local service provider, and I think it was probably about 3 months after I had the phone, something went wrong. So I took it back in, I talked to the tech man, a serviceman there, and he looked at my phone, and I remember my consternation when he looked at my phone and he said, oh yeah, these older phones, he said, we can't get parts for them anymore. I'd had the thing just several months. Really? Can't get parts. Of course, they were ready to sell me a new one. And actually what alarmed me in reflection on that was that I was kind of glad to have a new one, you know? I'd had this thing for 3 months and it kind of lost its initial glitz. this appeal is just incredibly strong. A number of years ago, I saw the Ultimate Pen advertised, and it functioned as a regular pen and as a screen stylus, as a flash drive, and as a phone charger, all in one device. Wow. So I'm all for efficiency, and so this thing was pretty expensive, but I bought two. One for me and one for my wife. I thought I'd help her too, you know, in this. I don't think I've ever made a worse purchase. For one thing, I rarely use a stylus. For another thing, I rarely use a phone charger. I don't use my phone enough that it needs charge, typically. And who wants to have flash drives sticking 6 inches out of your computer? So, and when this thing came, it was amazing, but it was bigger than I thought it was going to be and incredibly heavy. I mean, imagine all that stuff in there. So this thing was heavy and big, but it had a really tiny ink cartridge. The one function of the phone that I would use, I realized that I'd have to put in, they actually sent a second one, I think, to pacify you, but I realized I'd have to, that one function I had to use in a very limited way. I'd run out of ink. So I soon had second thoughts and third thoughts and fourth thoughts, and most of those were depressing. After that pen sat on my desk for a number of months without being used, I decided I'm going to try to sell it. And I discovered a number of things. One of them is that most of the people at Faith Builders were smarter than I was. And a second thing I learned is that I need to develop sales resistance. Third thing I learned was that heavy pens make good paperweights. So do rocks. And rocks are free. Okay. So that leads us to the next trap. The next concern is a waste of resources. I'd like to look just at two areas of waste. First is money, and just a number of statistics here. The U.S. Has 129 million smartphone users. The average monthly bill is $70 for the use of these smartphones, the plans. This amounts to $108 billion annually. And by the way, 129 million users is about 40% of the population. And our total population of 325 million includes children and old people. Okay? So there's a lot of use. Smartphones. Every second today, over $3,000 is being spent on pornography. Waste of resources. Americans bought an estimated 300 million wearable devices in 2017. Okay, that includes 30 million smartwatches, but wearable devices. Okay, we on our wrist, sometimes armbands hanging on. I'm not certain where all the wearing takes place, but wearable devices. 2015, consumers spent $23.5 billion on the electronic gaming industry. And would insert here that with gaming, we're talking about traps, the two most popular games are, one is the top is action games. They call them action. That's a euphemism, by the way, for killing and for murder and fighting and whatever. The second is actually professional football. Madden, I think it's come out 19 years now or something and running, but coming out with football, that's the second most popular game. Another area then of wasted resources would be time. Smartphone users, a number of studies here have been done, smartphone users spend about 5 hours a day on their phones. And I just incidentally here, is another study that I came across recently, and the top 10% of smartphone users touch their phones more than 5,000 times a day. Okay, average users, it's around 2,000 or 2,500 times a day in that range. I don't know where you come into that, but the tendency to use it, to look at it, and think of all the time that is being used there. One of the greater concerns has to do with children and their use. Children ages 2 to 5 spend more than 32 hours per week watching television. Children ages 6 to 8 who spend a good chunk of the day in school still average 28 hours per week in front of the tube. And also had seen a statistic recently in the book Nonsense is Destroying Our Nation, where he was comparing the amount of time that children spend in school with the amount of time they spend on electronic devices. And in that time, from the time that they are, by the time they get to 18, they will have spent 11,000 hours in school. Okay, but during that time, with all the viewing and all the interaction, they have seen, I think it is over 300 million advertisements. And what he went on to say is that in our attempting to address this, we often are pouring money into, in the U.S., pouring money into education, feeling like we have to put better, do better education. And he said, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. That's actually not where the problem is. The problem is the distraction. The problem is the use of time in wrong ways. Today, 98%, this is in the U.S., 98% of families with children have a mobile device. 42% of young children have their own tablet device. 42% of young children. Lynn Clark is at the University of Denver and has been doing research on disadvantaged children. And she noted in a recent study, quoting now from the study, and she says, rich and poor families now have about equal access to smartphones. Okay, that tells us how important this is for people, but about equal access, children. But, she says, kids from poor families spend twice the screen time. She goes on to say then, the missing ingredient in understanding the real impact of the digital divide. When she talks about the digital divide, she's talking about this between the rich and the poor, but she says the divide is parenting time. We have set up a society where it is structurally very difficult for families to spend time together. So again, we're looking at impact of the digital world technology on the family, but we're also recognizing that wasting time is a significant trap. Now, in talking about the waste of resources, wasting money and wasting time, that actually is not talking probably about the most significant wasting of resources. If we think about human resources, if we think about the waste of human creativity, if we think about the effect on relationships, if we think about the development of human talent, these traps are actually creating waste in fairly non-measurable ways. Okay, we can talk about money, we can talk about time, but what about the development of creativity? What about the development of human talent or relationships? I came across an article recently by Ashley Britton in which she very honestly talks about the title of her article is My Phone Ruined My Relationship. I quote, in November 2011, an iPhone 4 fell into my hot little hands. Back then, this mysterious magical piece of smart technology seemed like the gateway to only fun and positive things. Fast forward 6 years and 5 iPhones later, and like so many others, I had become horribly, toxically, inextricably chained to a smartphone universe. She goes on to describe she had a 4-year relationship with a man and describe some of the ways in which that affected it. And here's what she says then. I picked this up later in her article. My rock bottom, the point at which I realized just how addicted to my phone I was, happened when my 4-year relationship came to an end. I won't sit here and say my phone was the sole reason for my breakup, but it played a significant role. There were warning signs that I had ignored. Months before my breakup, my partner expressed feeling increasingly sad and concerned that I spent all my time and energy talking to everyone but him. Eventually, the problems in our relationship came to a head and we called it quits. In the aftermath, I was left with years of memories and a smartphone that couldn't provide enjoyable company across a dinner table, share in the joys of experiencing a concert, or tell me goodnight. All these things I had previously taken for granted simply because I was too preoccupied looking for fulfillment from a screen. We talk about waste, we can talk about tangible things like money and time, but the waste in relationships, the waste in human development. Which leads us, this little story leads us directly to the problem of addiction. There's a term I came across recently or some time ago here called gamer widows. You know what they are. It's a designation for ladies, wives, whose husbands enjoy spending time on the computer. Interestingly, the average age of gamers who spend the most time and money is, what would you think? It's 37 years old. The ones who spend the most time and money. These gamers are 59% male, 41% female. In an article entitled, "Who is Addicting You to Tech?" the writer zeroed in on the producers, and this is what he has to say, I quote, "Online services like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, BuzzFeed, and the like are called out as masters of manipulation, making products so good people can't stop using them. Since these services rely on advertising revenue, the more frequently you use them, the more money they make. It's no wonder these companies employ teams of people focused on engineering their services to be as engaging as possible. These products aren't habit-forming by chance. It's by design. They have an incentive to keep us hooked." Addiction. In 2011, there's a lady by the name of Elise Badley from Utah. She posted an ad on Craigslist. She said she wanted to sell her game-obsessed husband. This is what she put on. "I am selling my 22-year-old husband. He enjoys eating and playing video games all day. Easy to maintain, just feed and water every 3 to 5 hours. You must have internet and space for gaming. Got tired of waiting, so free to good home. If acceptable replacement is offered, we'll trade." She insisted when she was interviewed that she posted the ad as a joke. But she posted it after her husband went on a 48-hour gaming binge, and she felt lonely and ignored. And she said she received an avalanche of replies, including a number of personal ads from men offering to trade places with her husband. On a more ominous note, gaming addiction can be deadly. On January 5th, 2015, a man named C was found dead in a Taiwanese internet cafe after 3 days of steady gaming. And the article said, police said gamers in the cafe continued as if nothing had happened, even when the police and paramedics arrived. Now, there are some who, when I came across this article, it noted that this was not the first death that has been a result of gamers playing continuously for a number of days, but this was one, happened in 2015. There are some who might question, is it okay to call these things addictions? Is an addiction to gaming the same as an addiction to substance like alcohol or cocaine? And we'll insert here, researchers have found that the brain activity in a porn addict is virtually indistinguishable from the brain activity of a drug addict. Now, I am going to insert here that does not necessarily prove that it's okay to call it an addiction, that it is the same thing. It may be correlation. You understand the correlation there. And yet, that pull seems to be there, and it seems to render, maybe the biblical language, it renders people, puts people in bondage. And so maybe that's the better use here. But it is bondage. It is something from which people have an incredibly difficult, find it difficult to extricate themselves from. I saw this some time ago. I don't know how well you can see this, but a couple of angels are observing new arrivals, and they say most of the new arrivals seem incapable of conversation. They just stare at their hands in despair. A fourth trap is what I would like to call self over relationships. Difficult to know exactly how to think about the self-centeredness that happens with a fascination with electronic media. You would have seen it actually in the illustrations that I gave before, where people are so taken up with their electronic gadgets that they ignore relationships, absorbed in satisfying and pleasing themselves. We might call this the selfie generation. And here's a quote: we are unfortunately loving ourselves to death, overrating our abilities, overvaluing our opinions, and admiring our selfies at every turn. Back in 2016, I saw an article, and I get a notification from a very liberal publication, electronic publication. And in some ways, I get weary of the things that are there, but it does help me to stay alert to things that are happening. But there was an article there by a lady advocating that I think the title of the article was something like, "This day, this year, give yourself a Valentine." So for 2016, this is what she wrote: "It's that time of year again, folks, when we turn to the one we love and shower them with affection, warmth, and love. When we take time to plan something they will really enjoy, when we reflect on what they need to feel cherished and pampered, if all this sounds like it would be wonderful to receive as well, why not be the one to give it to yourself?" So be your own Valentine. We swim in this water, and it's hard for us sometimes even to understand how much we are pampered and encouraged to pamper ourselves, to think of ourselves, to like ourselves, to do things for ourselves. And I'm suggesting here that this, of course, keeps us from the two greatest commandments. In a more startling I came across this article, this startling example of self-centeredness. On January 27, 2015, Yasmin Elaby, a lady who was unable to find the man of her dreams before turning 40, decided to marry herself. She was walked down the aisle by her mother and married by three ministers, one of whom was her sister. As one cannot legally marry oneself in America, the ceremony was spiritual, she said, rather than legal. Elaby said her vows to herself with the help of her ministers. These vows were on committing to forgive, love, and honor yourself. The pull of some of this technology is to please ourselves, to serve ourselves, and I'm concerned about the ways in which it takes us from relationships. I think you probably have all seen this. I've noticed it more and more, especially with the advent of smartphones, how much people walk around with these things in front of them. I have been concerned about people walking into poles and into walls and into whatever else because this thing is always in front of them. But one of the really sad things is when I go to a public place where people sit and apparently are there to do things together, like a restaurant. And I see this regularly where people are sitting at a restaurant as a family and everybody's got their device in front of them and they're looking at whatever they're looking at. I don't know, communicating with others. Self over relationships, the pull of these things. One of the more sinister traps is the trap of sexual snares. It's hard for us, probably, with these kinds of snares to know what is the best way for us to understand these, but this is certainly one of the snares. And again, just a number of statistics to help us think about it. Every second, 28,000 users are watching pornography on the internet. Every second, more than $3,000 is being spent on pornography on the internet. Every second, 372 people are typing the word adult into search engines. 40 million Americans regularly visit porn sites. That's regularly visit. 35% of all internet downloads are related to pornography. 25% of all search engine queries are related to pornography, or about 68 million search queries a day. One third of porn viewers are women. Search engines get 116,000 queries every day related to child pornography. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure to pornographic content through ads, pop-up ads, misdirected links, or emails. Which means that if we are Christians and we are involved in using the internet, that there will be times when we face objectionable things coming up without our intent, without the intention to pursue them. 2.5 billion emails are sent or received every day containing porn. Every 39 minutes, a new pornographic video is being created in the United States. And there are about 200,000 Americans who are porn addicts. And I know these are statistics, and in some ways they bombard us, and we wonder, you know, it may be difficult for us even to understand how does this impact us if our hearts are not turned that way. But again, the reality is that these things pull on us. And seeing, I wonder how many times I've talked to people who talk about seeing something that was, it wasn't pornography, but they looked at that and then that led to something else and that led to something else, and then they are in tears because of addictions or because of having gotten into things that make them ashamed of who they are. And so I wonder, are there Anabaptists, porn addicts? Technology not only enables us to access porn, but it provides greater anonymity. You can do these things without other people knowing. You can be a teacher in a Christian school and carry on a private life for years that is totally contrary to the person you are projecting, to your students, to your church. These are traps. These are traps that lead to tragedy. Again, the issue is how strong this pull is. If we stand back and try to think about this, what is amazing? I have seen grown men breaking down, weeping in tears because of what this has done to them, to their relationships, and yet they go back to it. These are traps. A sixth trap that I'd like to think about with you does relate perhaps to some of the others, but it is the trap of escape. And I do want to note here that with escape, there is both a healthy and an unhealthy kind of escape. Sorry, looking for something here on my notes. Healthy and unhealthy kind of escape. And so I want to balance this and recognize, and maybe that you use different terminology for healthy escape. But Mildred Tengbaum, in her book on grieving, Grief for a Season, talks about that there actually can be a healthy escape when people are in emotional overload. She says, we who grieve and those who support us should understand that we need some times of escape as a necessary part of the grieving process. We hurt too much. Denial and escape provide us short resting places, time to regain our courage and strength so that we can go on. So just wanting to say here that there are times when people who operate under heavy load, whether it is the load of grief or the load of teaching, there are appropriate times to stand back. There are appropriate times to laugh. There are appropriate times to do lighter things, to be entertained. There are appropriate times when we escape that world and put it aside. So I would recognize that it is possible even that technology might be part of technology. We may use that as a certain amount of escape. The difficulty, of course, that we're going to struggle with is at what point does it become unhealthy? And I want you to notice what she says in her words here. She talks about escape as a time to regain courage and strength in order to go on, in order to face. And so our escape, if you want to call it that, our rejuvenation, our recreation, our entertainment ought to better equip us to face our responsibilities, not to escape them. So let's think about the unhealthy kinds of escape. Escaping reality can happen in a variety of ways, but virtual, I have girlfriends here because the article that I was looking at was looking at girlfriends. There are virtual boyfriends as well. But in this article, the writer was exploring especially what is happening in Japan. And just to insert here that Japan has been on the cutting edge of technology, you know that, and have developed virtual realities for people Coupled with that, there are a number of things in Japanese society that contribute to this, but I've read numerous studies about Japanese society, and what they're finding is that people, actually young people especially, are enjoying virtual relationships above real relationships, because virtual relationships are manageable and always give you nice input, whereas regular relationships, there's work to it. And they are very pressed. It's an honor society, and they're very pressed to achieve and find that virtual friendships are actually preferable to real ones. In this article, the author says there is no friction in these relationships, obviously. The girls behave very sweetly with the guys in what they say, how they respond to them, and with big eyes and heart-shaped faces. Who wouldn't want that? Virtual friendships. Another study that was done by forget what her credentials were, but to doing a study of Japanese society, said that one of the things that is happening in Japanese society then is that young people are not getting married. Again, real relationships are too difficult, and there's a plummeting then population. That is, they don't know for sure what's going to happen in the next 20 years, or if it continues, the population will actually decrease to where they will find it difficult to maintain their culture. Virtual family. In March of 2010, the three-month-old baby of a gaming couple in South Korea died of starvation. According to the article, the parents fed their baby once a day while spending up to 12 hours a day playing on the internet. Ironically, the game they were playing was a virtual world that included a virtual baby. The baby died. A police officer told the reporters, the couple seemed to have lost their will to live a normal life because they didn't have jobs and gave birth to a premature baby. They indulged themselves in the online game of raising a virtual character so as to escape from reality, which led to the death of their real baby. This was posted in the Boston Globe back in 2010. So we've looked at a number of traps. It's a dark picture. It's not a nice picture for us to look at. And it may sound, when we look at a subject like this, as though, again, all technology is bad, and I don't mean that so. I began by pointing you to many of the benefits that we have from technology. Incalculable, almost, benefits. Medicine, business, information, purchasing options, and so on. But we need to be aware of the traps. And one of the things about the traps that are associated with technology is that we sometimes don't feel the bite until it's too late, until significant damage has been done. And many of the illustrations which I gave you will help us to understand that. So that the lady who ruined her relationship with her man by the phone, found out years later, came to realize it once the relationship was broken. Tomorrow, I want to think about rising to the challenge. How do we address these things? I know today I've not given many answers. It will help us, though, perhaps then as we talk about responding, rising to the challenge. And I want to just say here that, again, in order to address these things, we might look at these dangers and say, okay, let's just not use technology. The reality is that we use it. Okay, almost no matter what level of conservative we are, we use technology in some way. And so I give you just a bit of a hint here. We are, in some measure, Christians. We live in the information age, in the technology age. We are engaging in these things. The question that we have to be asking is, How are we engaging? And so when we think of these things and we think about traps, we need to recognize that there's a two-pronged approach. And those two prongs are, first of all, we need to be engaged in doing what is good, which comes back to fulfilling the two greatest commandments. We need to be engaged in that, and then considering what we've looked at today, we need to be able to turn from, be willing to make the hard decisions to turn from, if I might borrow Jesus' language, to hate, to cut off what hinders us from what is most important. And so I would like to conclude here by singing the second stanza, the song we sang on Tuesday. We sang, Lord, I am fondly, earnestly longing into thy holy likeness to grow. Let's sing the second stanza, which begins, dead to the world would I be, O Father.
Dead to the world would I be, O Father, dead unto sin, alive unto thee. Crucify all the earthly within me, emptied of sin, and self may I be. Open the wells of grace and salvation, pour the rich streams deep into my heart. Cleanse and refine my thought and affection. Seal me and make me pure as thou art.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.